Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole, and you are here with Andrea Vitamus and Jason M.F. Caldwell. And we are here tonight
on this beautiful Tuesday,
going live. So there's going to be some issues for the first time in about 6 months, and we're very happy to be back live and be not in classes tonight.
Awesome. Yeah, the live broadcasts always seem to have glitches, don't they? But you know what? It brings some authenticity.
Oh, yeah. So we've gotten people to say stuff on air that they never would have otherwise said. So for the people who came out to my shapeshifting immersion and the other stuff, it was a fantastic time in Jackson, Michigan. That'll be what my next book's on. I think you were there, Jason. I thought you thought it was fantastic, too.
I loved it.
It was
good times.
And it wasn't normal magic, or it wasn't normal magic in the bad buttocksy sort of crazy weekend of magic that only that I pull off. So I want to thank everyone who's come to that. I want to thank to Shaman Jim, who runs on every other weekend, for hosting that. And it was a really great time. Really great time. So, Jason, we talked about this a little bit, right? You know,
there's been
a lot of crap talking on the internet lately, and we're not having it. I think we collectively agreed with this, right, Jason?
Yes, and I'm going to let Andrea explain most of it, but I'm going to tell you what we have here is a lot of people talking shit about chaos magicians and chaos magic, even though some of these same people say they respect our work.
Right, so we made the executive decision between us and the producers and everyone on the staff that if you really have posted something that damning and you won't have a real discussion about it, we're not having you on the show. And that's final. And that includes people who have been on the show before. Because it's getting tiresome to just not hear a discussion and hear insulting. And we don't need that. You don't need that. Nobody needs that. And that's, I think that's the decision we've been thinking about for a while. And I think we came to that decision. And that's just, I think it's a great decision. And I think it's unfortunate, but it's just, you know what I'm
saying? I'll just say that it's a tradition that Peter Carroll helped get going in the beginning of experimental magic and using what works. You know what? If other people want to do that and call it something else and talk shit about chaos magic, so be it. But right. we don't have to give them lip service.
And we're not judging people. We don't care what you do. Some of the vileness of the commentaries that have been out there, those people won't be coming back. And I think that helps me with my sanity. It helps Jason with his anger. It helps us with our blood pressure, and that's the way it's going to be. Right?
Yep, because I don't like me when I'm angry.
I don't like you when you're angry. You're kind of scary. You really don't like me when I'm angry, though.
We don't like each other when we're angry, so let's not go there. Okay, but I've got a couple other things to throw in, because Crucible is coming so freaking fast this year. It seems like it gets earlier and earlier every year. In fact, this year, it's October 1st. So
it does get earlier and earlier every year.
Yeah, so because when we first started going, it was the end of October. Now it's October 1st. So, Andrea, I don't think Andrea is going to be able to make it this year, or are you?
Yeah, it's this little thing called finals.
Grad school.
Midterms of grad school, so it ain't happening.
But I'm going to be there, so come out and show me love. It's you go to crucibleconvention.com and start looking at the ticket prices and hotel information like now, because it's coming up in 2 months.
Yeah, you never know. I might throw my weight in with a ritual that I helped Jason work on. Who knows, you know? If he's doing a ritual, I don't know. Are you doing a ritual?
I'm just doing one class and probably the panels.
All right, well, there you go.
Thank you.
Well, you know, hey. There you go. The only other announcement we have is that I am working with Spirit Apothecary, which is probably one of the best occult stores in the Cleveland area. And we're going to teach classes as soon as I can get off my buttocks. And by that I mean I just have to get off my buttocks and go talk to them. And the first set of classes we did was phenomenal, and everyone loved it. So we're going to teach there on a more regular basis. So if you love reading my work and love seeing what we're going to, there you go. Now, that said, speaking of loving reading people's work, we were very happy that the author today, we got a chance to read his stuff. Some of it before it's coming official, it's sort of on the cusp of coming out. Our author tonight, Mike King, is a demonologist. He's written a book called The Hand of Glory, and we'll go into that with him, the history of The Hand of Glory. But when I read it, it was a refreshing change, I have to say. I consider myself, as many people know, I do some demonology. We've had Stephanie Reiser on the show several times. You know, I've written books with her. So I'm in, right? And when I read this, I thought, this is cool.
I thought it was very cool myself. And give you a little bit of Mike King's background. He's been doing some serious work for about 2 years now. He says he got serious in 2014, but we're going to talk to him more about this because I think he's been doing a little bit longer than that, probably. He works directly under S. Conley. And he's a first-time author, working now, getting ready to publish his second book, and we're going to touch on that a bit later. But he also believes in balance like we do. He works with both the demonic, the angelic, and some other types of folk magic, so we're going to get more into that as well. Well, how you doing tonight, Mike? It's good to have you.
I'm great. A thousand thank yous for you guys having me on tonight. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, we really appreciate it. Like I said, when I read it, I thought, this is cool. It's a refreshing, hands-on, no fluff, The Hand of Glory book. Just, this is what I did. Here's how it turned out, and here's how you can do it. So
thank you.
Kudos to you.
Yes, it's great. It's great to be on, man. I really appreciate it. You guys want to know about The Hand of Glory? You guys want me to kind of go into it?
Well, you know what? Let's start off, because especially after some things we've said earlier. Now, be honest. I want to know how you found out about... Tell the audience how you found out about The Hand of Glory, how you got interested in it, because okay. there's a story to be told here.
Right. Okay, no problem. So, it actually, in a, you know, a thousand thanks to Steph, too, because... you know, under her guidance, she's actually kind of guiding me down my path in demonology. So I will put this out to the listeners and to you guys that I only speak from the path of demonology. So all the work that I've done, you know, with the angels, demons, djinns, geniuses and stuff, all come from my path of demonology and what I've learned from that. Awesome. So basically, it started with just a conversation I had with Steph back in, like, I think 2014. And I asked her, you know, she knew anything about the Hand of Glory and you know, anything outside of the most common uses and folk tales. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys have heard of it, that the Hand of Glory was basically created from chopping the hand off of a thief that was hung at the gallows. You kind of pickle the hand, you know, leave it in the sun, you know, leave it to dry, put some herbs and stuff on it, and then it has this magical ability to where, you know, it puts people to sleep, opens up gates, and just a bunch of variety of different things. So my thing is, I like to use my magic in a creative way. That's kind of one of my unique skill sets, is that, you know, I'm a deep practitioner. I like to put the work that I read into practice. Right? I don't like to bullshit people. Can I say bullshit on here?
Of course. Well, okay. Awesome. Okay, let's not make it any worse than that. Okay, Mike.
Okay. Right. So, you know, I don't, to be honest though with you guys, I don't like to bullshit people. So I like to basically just put forth work that's going to be usable. So with The Hand of Glory, I talked to her and we kind of chit chatted and stuff. And she said, well, hey, you know what? If you put some stuff together and it's worthy to be read by the other people, I'll look through it. We'll put it through DB, make sure that other people like it, and we'll push it through. So I took a few months and I really thought hard, and I was like, shoot, man, how can I actually make this a tangible thing? So I went through, you know, a few of the classes and stuff that I had with her, and I thought about talismans. And I was like, oh, you know what? It'd be really cool if I created a talisman that's represented by the Hand of Glory, a representation of the Hand of Glory in and of itself. Because, you know, I'm not going to go into some graveyard, you know what I mean, and search for some dead dude's hand. I mean, for one.
I would. No, I'm just kidding.
When I got a high major respect for the dead, you know, I wouldn't dare do anything like that. So I figured, you know, the most legal thing to do is to get some clay, read some of the legends, put some stuff together, put some stones and some herbs and stuff that are associated and equated with the actual goal that I'm trying to achieve. So I did that, put it through the test. Did the test run, used it for about a week or two, and I had instantaneous results. And it really surprised me because I was able to not only apply the folklore of the Hand of Glory and also my demolitory background. So I tied in both of those things into one thing. So I shot the manuscript over to Steph, and she liked it. I was really surprised because I thought, you know, me being a first-time writer, I have no background in writing, to be honest. You know, here I am, just some dude that's just, you know, in La La Land, like, oh, hey, you know, I'll just create this thing and let's just see if it works. And, you know, through her motivation and her guidance and stuff, she actually kind of led me down that path to actually put it into a manuscript form to where it can be read. So, yeah, I did that. She pushed it through and it became a success, I guess.
So, go ahead, let's slow it down a little bit, man, because, yeah, I know you're excited, first time on the radio and all that. It's great. It's good to have you. But now, I read your book, and I enjoyed the story behind it, because you found out about the Hand of Glory first through popular culture, through watching occult-based TV shows and things like that, right?
Right, okay.
But here's the thing, okay? Because this is a criticism that, you know, some of us chaos magicians get sometimes, because we like to pull things from popular culture.
Sure.
You did the work, though. You said, what is this thing, and what are the historical references to what this thing really is? I want to know.
Right. Yes.
So I'm curious, what kind of manuscripts did you go back to in your historical research to find out about the actual historical Hand of Glory?
So I kind of based my work off of, like, some of the shows and stuff that I've seen, like, you know, and I'm just going to be honest with you guys, like, you know, Constantine, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Supernatural, things of that nature. And, you know, I found some papers online, basically just a few things through my research, and I was able to kind of pull through. I mean, one of the things that actually helped me out was I found this interesting legend called The Hand of Glory and Other Legends About Human Hands. It was published by the University of Pittsburgh. So I kind of went through that. And also one big thing that I do want to kind of give acknowledgement to is the story about Yorkshire. About Yorkshire is actually the story from Oxford Press. But and come to find out, I was actually stationed out there when I was in the military. So basically, here it is. This story is based around in a place that I'm very familiar with, you know, the United Kingdom, England. So I kind of looked into that, and, you know, the stories, they go into, like, how, you know, thieves would come into pubs and they would put, like, the innkeepers to sleep and stuff, and then they would steal their stuff and then they'd be out through the night. So yeah, it's just kind of like a few published papers and stuff like that I looked online. Like I said, a lot of the shows and stuff like that, and just putting my own ideas together, to be honest. I mean, that's my thing. You know, I use a little bit of the material that I'll read, and the rest just comes from intuition. That's basically it. So I you know, I'm big on reading, but for me, I like to go off of my own creativity and my own intuition, because that's where the power lies. That's where the key is. So for me, applying a little bit of the knowledge of what I've read and just taking that and just applying it to what I've learned from my practices in demolitory. So yeah, that's basically how it came about.
So I want to talk about how you incorporated cemetery dirt into your work too, because now here's the deal, man.
Okay.
it's no secret. I've got a connection to the dead. Andrea's got a connection to the dead. We like working with the dead, okay?
Right. Oh, my God. We spend more cemetery weekends in the cemetery than I do at the lake.
True. But, yeah, we have our favorite cemeteries. Let's just put it to you that way.
Okay. But
like you said, you weren't going to go and desecrate a grave and cut off a criminal's right. hand. But
right.
you saw the connection, how you could draw the energy of the dead through the graveyard dirt. Why don't you go into that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I mean, you have to think, man, like the cemeteries and graveyard dirt, it's a direct connection to the spirits, man. I mean, how much more closer can you get to a dead person's spirit or dead person's energy than that, you see? So from that, you're able to apply it to any tool, any technique, if you know what you're doing, if you know how to do it. So like I said, I know these things, but I'm not gonna go out and, you know what I'm saying, desecrate a grave and stuff like that. But if somebody who's really into necromancy, really into contacting the spirits, really into getting their hands dirty, they'll go out and they'll do that. They'll incorporate it into their hand. And so that will have a little bit more power than if you were to just create the hand out of just clay, stones, and herbs. So the connection to the spirits will automatically open up a gateway through the crossroads to the other side for you to be able to contact the energy that's closer to the earth than anything that's closer to the astral, if that makes sense. So, yeah, so that all applies to the fact of actually using and learning how to use and incorporate graveyard dirt and things of that nature.
Now, were you mixing graveyard dirt into your clay, or were you using it in your anointing upon the hand after it was molded?
No. Like I said, I didn't use. It was just an idea. So with the whole graveyard dirt thing, that was just an idea to kind of get people that are really into, like I said, into necromancy, dealing and talking with spirits, that kind of avenue to take. Because what I've noticed in a lot of books, minus Stephanie's, Andre's, you know, and a few other authors that I might mention later on, is that you guys are all about practicality. Right, you guys are all about straight in your face. This is how you do it. No BSing. And so basically, what I noticed is that a lot of people, they kind of pigeonhole techniques. They pigeonhole skill sets. So they'll say, okay, well, I'm just going to create. For example, we'll say, you know, I'll say, I'll create a hand of glory, a hand of light, and it's just going to be strictly clay. So for a person that's not very creative, won't really be able to step outside of that box, you know what I mean? So to give them a few different avenues to say, okay, well, you can use graveyard dirt, you can use herbs, you can use stones, you can use this, that will help you. And so that gives people a chance to kind of explore different avenues instead of just going by one solid thing. And my books are written for, you know, beginners, intermediary and above. So it's written for everybody, you know. So it's not just tailored towards one specific group of people.
Well,
okay,
that's partially true, Mike. Like some of the books actually involve at least 5 evocations, so it's not quite totally a beginner's book.
Okay.
I mean, let's be a little bit honest about that. If you're talking about 5 evocations in one talisman, you have to have some baseline skills.
Well, you know, you're right. But I look at it like this, right? So if a person, and this is just, like I said, I'm going to be honest with you guys. If a person's willing to pick up a book about magic, I don't care. It could be Crawley. It could be your book. It could be Steph's book. It could be my book. And they're willing to do the work. That means that they've reached a certain level that's advanced in their spirituality, in their understanding of magic. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be like, oh, well, la-di-da-di-da-di, I'm just going to pick up this book. It's something that caused them to that. So I believe, in my personal view, that that's some form of advanced magic. You know what I mean? Like, they may not understand the dynamics of evocation or invocation at that time, but as they work through it, it'll become much more clear for them.
I'll buy that. I would buy that people of various skill levels could enjoy your book and get use out of it.
Yeah, I'd say my only caveat would be you have to know how to evoke things. at least partially. That would be my only beginning skill level thing.
Right. Okay.
So, one of the things that there's lots of examples of like a hand of law, a hand of death, a hand of vengeance, hand of lust. So they're five-fingered, and the general formula is the same, or is just five related entities.
Right.
And maybe you could talk about, pick one of the hands that you made, and the kinds of results you got, and how the different spirits work together. How it's different to work with this five-handed hand, five-fingered hand, not five-handed. Oh.
Right.
Five-fingered hand versus working with the individual spirits, and what happens when you put them together, and the differences between the singular work and when you bring all this together.
Okay, sure, no problem. So first, just to give the listeners a little background about demolatry, in particular, far as the definition of demons. I'm not going to go into what demolatry is because they can read books on Steph and Steph's books and stuff like that. But just so people won't really get confused, I did put the term in here, demon. So I want to get that out the way because I know some of my friends may be listening and they may kind of get spooked out because I don't really talk about this stuff to a lot of people. So we're talking demons. So I pulled this, a couple of these definitions from dictionary.com and the British Dictionary. So we're talking about classical mythology, a god, a subordinate deity, as a genius of a place or a person's attendant spirit or a demon. Demonic, if inspired, or if indwelling spirit or a genius. From the British Dictionary, a demigod or a guardian spirit of a place or a person. So basically, just to kind of get that out the way, to let people know that demons are all-encompassing and genius spirits that aren't just categorized as dark entities.
Yeah, and we should classify that. I mean, we've had Stephanie on the show a few times, actually. And
right.
She's definitely daemons is closer to the original Greek word of spirit.
Right.
Even though she does tend to work with slightly darker entities, but that's okay. There's no judgment here.
Yeah.
We love Stephanie, so, you know.
Of course, with all of our heart. Basically, like I said, I just want to kind of get that out there so people are wondering what they are. That's it. So back to your question. So what I did was I incorporated five different entities into one hand. The reason why I did that was to kind of see the effect, because I'm experimental, right? I like to get my hands dirty, man. For me, being in the military, it's kind of like, you know, you're going to get your shit and you're going to go, basically. You know, there's no time to sit back, relax. You're just going to do it. If you're going to do something, you're going to do it. So for me, I took that attitude and I applied it to my hand. So I said, you know what? What's the worst that can happen if I apply five different demons to a single goal or a single thing that I'm trying to achieve or manifest in my life? So for me, I look at it as if you're applying... we'll use the hand of light, for example. So the hand of light involved five different kings. So five different demonic kings. So we had Person, we had who was it? Person, Lucifer, who else? Person, Lucifer, Baal, Asmodee, and Vine. So Vine. So basically, I looked at that as they're all demonic kings of a solar nature. Now, with that being said, we all know what the sun encompasses: success, revelation, knowledge, blah, 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 protection, so on and so forth. So I said, you know, I'm going to go a little bit lighter since this is my first hand, and no pun intended, and I'm going to apply it to this hand and to see how well I'm able to get results rather than to just use one entity. So it's kind of like you're supercharging that talisman instead of just using one particular entity to kind of slow down the work a little bit. So by me using those five kings, I was able to kind of, like I said, I put it in my book, I was able to kind of slip away from work without being seen, like invisibility, so to speak. I was able to kind of get answers when I needed them. I was able, because I was in a supervisory position at the time, leading soldiers and stuff. So I needed that. I needed that energy. I needed that ability to inspire my soldiers and stuff. So I was able to kind of have that authority, but not where it was overpowering. So I did get those results, and it basically just proved to me that this type of work was a great success in my eyes.
So how was it different when you were working with the hand versus each entity? Like, how did you feel different? Like, did you feel, you know, like Voltron? You know, the parts became something different? Or was it like you could tell the presence of the five entities still?
Oh, definitely, for sure, Andre. Like I was able to separate what each entity, because when I created the hand, I created a circular invocation to charge it. You know, I did a pillar of light, pulled down the energies, left it to charge, and used it at that point in time. I lit the candles each day that I was working with it. So each day is kind of like a different attribute will come up. So for leadership, you know, that would be, I look at Persan personally as a demon of leadership, you know, of kind of like, you need to get something done. He's the deity to go to. He's the energy to go to, the consciousness to go to. So pulling that away, that leadership energy is basically underneath him. So the knowledge portion, obviously you got Lucifer. For success in the job, we had Baal. So as these different areas were being activated in my life, even though I lit the hand all at one time, I was still able to in tune into which demon was under that influence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
So basically, as I'm going through and, you know, I'm hiding away, you know, from the bosses, I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is Baal. I'm able to go invisible at this point in time to actually knock out some work or do whatever I need to do. You know, when I need people to listen to me without being too authoritative, that was more of a person thing, you know? So yeah, each demon had their highlights, so to speak.
Now, how would you describe the synthesis in the work? Is it like the candle acted as an offering unto said spirit as an exchange for the work being done for you? How would you describe that interchange that was going on?
Well, my personal thing is that I don't really look at it as, and this is my personal beliefs and,
sure,
and personal thing with demolatry. I don't look at it as an offering. You see, I look at it as a communion, as something like you're working together. This is something that, like family, right? You're gonna go to them and you're just gonna work together. It's not, hey, I'm gonna give you this offering, can you do X, Y, and Z for me? Because for me, that's kind of offsetting. It's off-putting towards that energy, that demonic entity, and it looks more like a business transaction, you know? So when I approach my demonic work, I do it from the perspective of really working with them, really getting to know these demons and stuff. So the candles per se worked as a avenue for energy, basically. So the light, the flame itself, was the ability, was something that the demons were able to use as an ability to manifest things in the physical world. So you have to have some type of physical link to your spiritual work. So the flame represents that physical link. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the actual manifestation into the physical world.
Right, exactly. So it's like, you know, as I'm working through the candles are actually working as just a medium for the demonic spirits to work through. So I don't really look at it as an offering per se.
Okay. So you love the results from the Hand of Light.
Oh, I loved it. Yes, definitely.
So sure, what would you say, what kind of work have you done since then that's been your absolute favorite, other than the Hand of Light?
I would, wow. Okay, that's a good question. So I think The next best work that I've done has been the Nuctamirai with Stephanie. I mean, and I recommend to anybody, man, if you're really trying to get your hands dirty, if you're really trying to learn how to do real magic, like, take some of her classes. Man, like, it was 12 months of hardcore work. So what this work was, it was just names of spirits, and you had to do the work to find sigils, to find ends. You know, you had to create ritual spaces. You had to come up with artifacts. And these things really test your limit as a magician.
Hold on for a second, Mike. Because okay. I actually meant, what other use for the Hand of Glory, another variant of the Hand of Glory, other than the Hand of Light. But you're touching on something here. Because you're working with Stephanie. And because you mentioned doing things like this with demons in your Hand of Glory book.
Right.
So... you said finding ends. Now tell our audience who's not all into demonolatry.
Okay.
What is an end? I find this interesting.
Okay, an end. In other words, for people that aren't used to it, is an incantation. Basically, is demonic language. That's spoken. I mean, it came up throughout the Dukante hierarchy. So these are things that he was able to pull from his ascension work. That link directly to the demons for communication, for whatever uses you can think of, an end would fit that means as an incantation to bring down the spiritual energy of that demonic force.
So in some ways you're using it like others would use a mantra in other work.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a channel of mantra.
Okay.
Yes.
So now go in there, tell me whatever the other use of the Hand of Glory was, your next favorite to the Hand of Light.
I'm sorry?
Can you guys hear me okay, or am I breaking up?
No, I can hear you. You're good.
Okay.
You just broke up. Sorry about that. Can you say that again?
Okay. As you were experimenting more with the Hand of Glory, you got past the Hand of Light.
Right.
What other working with the Hand of Glory was your favorite once you got past the first experiment?
Basically I just stuck with the Hand of Glory. I mean the hand of light itself. Is that what you're referring to? Like if I create other hands?
Yeah, did you create other hands after that?
Okay, I got you, bud. No, I didn't create any other hands. I stuck with the Hand of Light because for me that's my favorite. And I like using it because it gives me, it's basically a one-stop shop for me. You know, if I need to know something, I can light candles for it. If I need to do certain work that deals with those particular five kings, I can use that hand. So for me, I find it to be my favorite amongst other ones. I mean, obviously I can go through and create other ones. I mean, there's other ideas of creating a finger of glory, you know, and, you know, things of that nature. So, but...
Sure.
For me, I just like using that one hand because for me, it gives me a chance to really attune myself not only to the demonic forces behind that particular talisman, because prolonged work will actually, you know, introduce you more into the current, but it also unveils different attributes about yourself that you may not have known. So it's a form of internal work as well, too.
Well, what did you learn about you, Mike?
Well, man, I learned that, you know, if you really do deep work, if you really look within yourself, as far as like inner light and stuff like that, you'll be surprised what you'll find out about yourself. Because I noticed a lot of times, especially talking to some people, you know, it's just we have that cloudiness in our minds to kind of really avoid the inner darkness of ourselves to kind of open up that inner light. So for me, working with that hand has actually pulled me inwards and kind of cut off that connection so much to where I'm externally led. So I'm able to rely more on my own internal knowledge and intuition than you know, just kind of you looking at a hand to say, okay, well, this hand will provide me with invisibility, with knowledge, with wisdom. You know what I mean? I can kind of withdraw that from within myself and evoke it into the world, so to speak.
So by working with an external physical talisman,
yes,
you have found ways to channel those currents throughout yourself and do more of an open hand form of magic with it.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You got some other thoughts on this, Andrea?
Well, when you actually can't have been doing the hand, first of all, you have to look at some pictures because try to maybe post one on the website if I can snag it. But if there's the hand sits in the middle of a pentagram and the workings when you're calling all the five forces. So do you believe you're connecting to that egregore of the original Hand of Glory, like the general folklore, and kind of just taking it to a different direction?
I think that you're tapping into if you're meaning like the actual energy instead of a particular spirit. I look at it as you're tapping into that particular energy that deals with the Hand of Glory. Yes, no doubt. Because there's power in names, right? So if I name this book the Hand of Glory, obviously I'm going to be drawing in energy or a certain consciousness or intelligence of that particular thing. So yeah, I think not an egregore per se, but the essence of the hand itself. Yes.
The spirit of the original intent of the physical talisman.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes.
You know, it's almost like we're dancing with words, guys, because in a way I'd call those one and the same. My personal opinion. But
when you're actually, you know, working with this force now, I mean, obviously there are a few Hands of Glories that may still exist out there, like, you know, yeah, in museums and stuff. Do you plan to take this in any other directions with the Hand of Glory, like to do other things, make new hands, or?
I don't know. To be honest, guys, I did it to kind of make fun of myself. You know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, well, I don't want to take my magic too serious because I notice that happens a lot in today's age,
nah,
man.
That never happens. Never.
Man, I mean, you get some very serious-minded people that are, you know what I'm saying? They don't know how to have fun with their magic. So for me, when Steph brought the idea up, I snapped at it, man, because I was like, you know what? This would be a great time to have some fun. And if I mess it up and if people don't read the book, if people don't buy the book, so what? Who cares? You know, because it's the fact of me actually having fun, getting out there, creating something, and who knows, putting something on the market that nobody's ever seen before, and come to find out, lo and behold, Steph tells me, like, yeah, I've you know, never seen this type of work out there before. So I was really floored by it. I was really humbled by it. I still am humbled by it. But I don't know. I may take it a little bit further. I may not. I mean, I don't know. I'll have to think about that because I haven't really thought about it recently, you know?
Well, let me tell you something. I think you put enough information out there that you're going to inspire more experimentation, even if you choose not to experiment with it more yourself.
You think so?
I think so. In fact, I think I'm going to make one just for fun.
Hey, and if you do, please let me know. Please show me the
pictures.
I might make one.
Yeah, and if you do, please send me the pictures. Let me know because
I'll make one that's specifically necromantic, because
dude, that would be awesome.
See, he's thinking along the same lines I am about going against specific graveyard dirt.
We're pretty good. We're both pretty good necromancers, so
yeah, and that, you know, that'd be freaking awesome, man. Because that's my thing. Like, I love to see people and their work, man. I love to see people have fun with it, and if they can take, because in every book that I write, well, the two books that I've written, that I put in there, that I don't. My book is not to be as a stone, set in stone type book. It's not set in stone type material. It's a template. So I want people to get out there, read the book, and explore and have fun with it, man. I mean, you know, if you guys are creating hands of necromancy and stuff, that's pretty awesome, man. Definitely, for sure.
Oh, we'll share notes with you. We've got no problem with that.
So okay. There's a couple of things too. You are almost you. I'm almost embarrassed to say this. You got the first book done. You got a second book done right off the bat, and that's almost a publication. I don't think it's quite.
Yeah, it should be out sometime this week. Sometime this week. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So Divine Meditations.
Yes.
Why don't you give the audience an introduction to Divine Meditations and what inspired that?
Okay, so this one's a little bit darker. So I'll give you guys my backstory if that's okay.
Sure.
If we have
time. Oh yeah, we'd love to.
So I'll go off into how I got off into magic and up until where I am now. And like I said, this is all personal experience. It's not to really, you know, I'm not competing with anybody. I'm just putting this out there. I'm not competing with anybody. It's not, you know what I'm saying, whose gun is bigger. It's just my personal story. So we're going to backtrack to basically before I was born. And like I said, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to put this out there to you guys, my personal story, because I feel I don't have anything to hide. So it deals with before I was born. So before I was born, I had issues with you know, not having a father in the house. Actually, as a matter of fact, before I was born, when my mother found out that she was pregnant, my father wanted me aborted. Okay, so he gave her $200 and said, hey, I want you to abort this kid. So instead of my mom using the $200 to abort me, she kind of used that to get baby clothes. I considered that my first encounter with death. Okay, so scoot on down the line, 8.5 months. Come to find out, I was supposed to be born as a breech baby. And if you guys don't know what a breech baby is, that's basically, you know, where the baby's born feet first instead of head first. So my mother, because I grew up in a very spiritual, very Christian home. My mom did some very, very serious praying, very, very serious praying. And so basically that kind of turned me. That turned me to where I was born the right way. So basically, that's my second encounter with death. So fast forward a few years down the line, father gets murdered. I lose him. He's not in my life. Okay, so scoot on further down the line. And like I said, all this is relative, guys. And I'm just gonna tie in everything how it all ties in.
Sure.
So basically, scoot on down the line. I joined the military. Spent 11 and a half years in the army, stationed overseas, England, Japan. And Afghanistan. So I spent 6 months over in Afghanistan. While there, me and my teammates were working, got attacked by two mortars. Now, mind you, these mortars, obviously, I'm alive, and my teammates, we made it back alive. So one of the mortars during this time actually hit not too far from our place the first time. The second time, I was actually asleep, and it actually hit close to the defect. So I count those as four different times of me having almost an encounter with death. So with me drawing in all that, to kind of tie that in, I had ran from the idea of just spirituality and magic. And as you guys have read in my profile and as I posted in my books and stuff, I owe a huge thanks to my first mentor, Marcellus. If he's listening, thanks a lot, brother. You've helped a lot. Because I was reluctant to start practicing magic. That's the reason why I say 2014 is when I started practicing seriously, because for me, I've always had that spirituality. I've always had that magic, but I've ran from it. I never wanted to use it, guys. I never wanted to use it because, you know what I mean? It's like something that's just chasing you down. I never wanted to use it. So here it is. I do some deep meditation. You know, do a lot of qigong, a lot of standing pose and stuff like that, and kundalini breathing, chakra work and stuff like that. And, you know, the spirits tell me, you know, stop running. Stop running from who you are and what you are. Tell the world your story. Tell the world how you've been able to convert that darkness into light. And so basically, divine meditations deal with my process. Obviously, I don't go into that whole morbid, dark story in divine meditations, but I go through the process of working through your own abyss, personal abyss, and how you're able to draw on that darkness to transmute it to a form of light to where you can really, really, really do some good work for yourself and others around you. In today's day and age, man, shit's going all types of haywire. It's because people don't know how to manage their darkness. They don't know how to balance their darkness. That's the reason why, you know, like I said, with Steph, I give huge thanks because I've been able to balance my work through demolatry of working with demons and angels. Because, you know, you're coming from one particular pantheon, you're afraid to step into the other because you don't know what's going to happen. So for me, I've been able to work with demonic forces that actually led me to some angelic forces. And it really surprised me because I was like, this isn't supposed to happen. Like, this is totally against the script. But so
hold on a second. Are you saying some of these demons went, hey, man, you ought to check out this angel?
Yeah, literally, man. Like, in my experience, I kid you not. I was doing work with Person, and, you know, some angelic names came up. Like, Marcosius, I've done work with him, and it's like, oh, yeah, I was a fallen angel, and these are the angels that were with me. And I'm like, what in the world? And so I do the research, and it kind of locks in. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. But it's all intuition. It's all intuitive-based at that
point. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, for me, I've been able to kind of lose that fear of kind of working with both sides. And for me, I feared the dark for the longest time, man. There's a story that I talk about in Divine Meditations, how I was actually staying in Ohio with some family members Hamilton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And during this time, I had some cousins who thought it would be funny to lock me in a basement. Now, mind you, I'm like 10 or 11 years old, man. And, you know, they just shoved me in the basement and they closed and they locked the door, man. They left me down there for maybe 5 minutes. But to a kid that's not used to that type of energy, that environment and stuff, it scared the shit out of me. Yep. It scared me shitless. So it took me many, 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 many years to get over that. And like I said, by doing works of Steph, Andre, E.A. Coetting, Edgar Cavall, Ascendant Mason, my personal mentor, Marcellus, you all have actually contributed to me actually moving beyond that fear because it was stagnating for me. So that's what Divine Meditations is. It deals with that. It deals with, don't be afraid to go into that abyss of your inner self and to use it. It's there. Learn how to balance those polarities within yourself. That way you become a more balanced person, you know?
Excellent.
So one example you gave people, maybe you could run people through it so they can walk away scared and horrified. No, I'm just kidding.
No. And then, you know, I say that because that's my thing, guys. I don't want the image. And I don't want to have that image of being dark, scary, and spooky. That's not who I am. People who know me personally, they know I'm not like that. I laugh, you know, I smile all the time. I carry a good head on my shoulders, you know. I think about the better things in life instead of just the shit that goes on, because that can easily spiral you down to a place to where you don't want to be. I've been there. And so,
You mean you can do work like this and not act like you're all dark and spooky?
Dude, all the time. I mean, you know what I'm saying, Jason. Like, you see these guys.
I know.
You know,
I'm not going to name any names. We all know them.
You know, it's like, you know, I'm not going to.
It's all right. That's still not as bad as you going around the last festival telling everyone I was the demon whisperer, Jason.
I did not start that. Somebody else came
the
up.
Demon whisperer?
Yeah. Up in Detroit, somebody comes up and goes, so the word is around here, you're the demon whisperer.
To me.
Wait, what does that even mean?
It means that I have an ease and ability to summon demonic entities quickly to visible appearance in front of other people.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's a compliment, I guess.
Yeah, let's just say it may not be like the movies, but when the demons come, people feel them.
Right. And, you know, and that's one thing from reading Steph's books, man, that really, like, it really took the blinders off, because here I am watching, you know, Harry Potter and, you know, The Conjuring and all this other stuff. And you think that these demonic spirits are going to automatically appear in front of you. And you're like, oh, my God. And it's not like that, man. Everybody's different. You know, if you guys have studied NLP, you guys know that there's other sub-modalities and modalities that lead us to where... Oh,
that's absolutely true, yeah. And not, you know, everyone is going to be visual to start with, and...
Exactly. So, you know, for a person to say, well, I've seen this demon, maybe in their mind they have, doesn't mean that I'm going to see the same entity. I may feel a change in environment, or I may hear...
I mean, and you probably had this too. I mean, Jason was a little demonic shy before working with me for a few years.
Yep.
Okay. And yep. He's seen some weird stuff when I call demons. Like, I'll ask for the demon's presence outside, and it's a demon of wind, and a gust of wind will come right when I ask for proof of its presence. Like, right. Crazy stuff like that that happens fairly enough. And I'm sure you've had similar experiences. And
oh, yeah, man. I'll tell you about some work that I was doing with Lucifer, man. So I was doing some work with Lucifer. It was a week-long project that I was doing. And this is actually where I came up with one of my meditations that's actually in Divine Meditations called the Saturnian Sun. So as I'm doing this week-long work with Lucifer, I'm doing my meditations and stuff and going into the astral, blah, blah, blah. Day six, I go over to my friend's house and I spend the night over there, and I wake up to her coming upstairs, shaking me. And I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, you need to come downstairs right now. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? So I walk downstairs and I look, and there was a plant pot that was on top of her fireplace. And it had been there the whole entire time that I was there. But in the morning, it was thrown across the room. And where it landed, it exploded and it singed the floor. There was literally a singe mark on the floor. And I was like, oh, shit. Like that was like real first hardcore, like, immersion into demonology, you know, so to speak. And I was like, wow. And that there would usually run a lot of people off. But I wanted to go deeper, man. I was like, okay, now we're on.
I know that. That's the Faustian urge. I know that all too well.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, oh, I want to know.
The last time I did Lucifer work, I sat down, we started doing the work, and then all of a sudden people are looking at me because I'm spouting shit off for like 20 minutes. They're like, what the hell's going on here? And then someone realizes, that ain't Andrea.
Let me just say.
He got invoked.
He went into the biggest Luciferian / Gnostic rant you have ever heard, and I wish I had recorded it.
It was awesome.
It was all about redeem us from the Demiurge, yada yada yada. He went on for 20 minutes. It was awesome.
But isn't it something like how you get that, man? And when the energy start working through you, and you start getting that consciousness, it comes out and you have no control. I mean, you have control. I don't want to tell people like, oh, you don't have control. Well, you always have control. You know, but when you allow that energy to work through you, man, it's a beautiful thing, because now you're communicating you're communicating with the real spirit, you know?
I mean, I do voodoo, so I'm used to possession rituals. Besides writing books with Stephanie and demonology, I'm initiated too, so them coming on that strong was like that. But this was, it was not supposed to be a possession ritual, and it was very cool. They were, so that was the last time. But it was a 20-minute beautiful rant against the Demiurge by what everyone else told me. and against our own chains that bind us to our weakness, which sounds very, very much like your meditation too, like a
right
Saturnian sun meditation, and to be more divine and how to release the chains that hold us back.
Yeah, and so basically I do want to throw this out there for people that will get the book, that are interested in getting the book. So in each section, I headed it, because because in my work, I don't like to put blinds or encrypted messages. I don't have time for that shit. And if you're buying the book, you're buying it to do work. You're not doing it. You're not buying it to kind of have knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay to have knowledge, but like I said, I'm all about practicality. So in each section, I headed it with specific entities and deities that would actually help bring about that change. So, you know, I got the energies of Kali in there. The energies of Satan in there. Colopateron, the gate opener. So these energies will actually help bring about that change a little bit more smoother or a little bit more harshly, depending on how you fight it. One of the biggest meditations that I will put out for the book is the chakra dissolution meditation that I really want people to try it. And, you know, if you got me on Facebook, send me a message and let me know how it works out for you. Because I gave it to a couple of people and they said it worked really well. So that's one of the biggest things that I kind of wanted to put out there for the book in particular.
Right. That particular meditation, we only have about 4 minutes, is much like a chode ritual in a way.
What ritual?
A chode ritual, much like a destruction of the eye, or it's not just the eye, but it's like existing in a place where getting to a place where there is nothing but you that remains.
Right. Yes. And that's it, Andrea. Like, you hit it dead on the head, man. Like, that's kind of what I wanted. The intent behind it was to kind of get rid of ego.
Yeah, reading this, it's very funny, Mike, because Jason was there over the weekend when I did a ritual with everyone. That was it wasn't with the chakras, but it was a disillusion ritual that did exactly the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. Nice. Where there was nothing left, but all that's left is you. After everything else was destroyed, which is, like I said, is a different take. This is a very good ritual. It's a different take on what would be classically called in Buddhism is a chode ritual, which is a ritual of self-destruction. So that way you learn detachment from the physical world and can connect to your deeper gnosis. And it does this with the chakras, which I haven't really seen one like this before. But it makes perfect sense to me since, well, I just did it over the weekend.
Thank you. Oh, you did it? Oh, okay. Yeah, you were saying that. Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. So that means that it does have something behind it. It has some value.
There's a lot of historical value to this. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's definitely excellent. So we got 2 minutes, and the show just went like that, even though it's a live show. So do you have any book signings or anything upcoming you're going to try to do before you get back to grad school too?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any? We only have 2 minutes left, so
yeah.
Do you have any book signings or events that you're actually going to physically appear at before you get back to your higher grad school learning as well?
No, not really, man. I mean, I'm in med school right now, so that's taking up all of my time. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if the chance popped up, I probably would, but I would have to squeeze it into my schedule. But, you know, I'll continue, you know, to kind of talk with staff and to kind of do my own work. And if stuff comes up that's of interest, I'll push it past, you know, her and you guys as well, too, if you're interested in. Yeah, just kind of go from there. But for right now, not really.
All right. Well, if you are back in Cleveland, stop by, give us a call, or Ohio, between me and Jason. We would love to have you back in the show as you get more work done. I want to thank you because, like I said, I think both of these books are really excellent. No fluff books.
Thank you.
Published by Stephanie Reiser's company. All the details will be on our website. Do you have an email address or a Facebook that people can connect with you at?
Yeah, if they look for Mike King on Facebook, you'll see me. You'll see me. But far as email and stuff, not really, because I don't really like giving out my personal email.
That's fine. Mike King on Facebook, so there you go. We'll have all the details on the in the show notes after the show, and I'm going to take us on out with the Luminous again live. Thank you, the Luminous, for this fine music. Mike, if you could stay online, we're going to switch out and take us on out.